is the chair of the finance committee, and we've got Ms. Karen Fredo, who is also a board member. And then from management, myself, next to me is the CFO, our chief financial officer. I was the COO and the chief of qualifications and research at the back. Thank you for the opportunity, Chair, to make a presentation of our annual report. We were given a brief that we need to prepare a very short presentation for about 15 minutes. But perhaps I can just say to members of the committee the details are in the annual report, and now and again I will refer to the annual report. Because we have a very brief presentation, I'm not going to touch on the highlights, if you allow me. I think in terms of the annual our financials for 2011-2012, our total revenue was 691 million, and our expenditure was 732 million, meaning that we exceeded the our income by about 1 million. And the reason for this deficit is because we had to go and eat into our reserve to be able to make this expenses, primarily for our discretionary income. And the increase in the revenue is because firstly we received in the new landscape, the minister allocated fewer retailers to us, who brought in the revenue, but also general increases in the sector in terms of development. And then in terms of expenditure, we are happy to report that we increased our mandatory grants 19% in 2012. The discretionary grant increase is about 123%, meaning we
meaning
let's push up the cell phones wherever they are on, because it will interfere with our recording.
So meaning that we spent quite a lot of money on discretionary grants, and as you can see, part of the explanation is that we allocated a lot of money on bursaries. There were two bursary schemes that we funded. One was for final year students, and the other one was for first year students, who we will fund for the next 4 years. And then we spent money on unemployed youth. We had an assistance program where we engaged about 4,500 young people and ensured that they get the workplace same. And then in terms of the balance sheet, I think the critical number to look at in our balance sheet is our total assets, which are made up of a capital reserve and the cash of 965 million. But we need to caution that that 965 million, 877 million is what we call discretionary reserve. This is the reserve we use for projects. And of that reserve, 803 million was committed at the end of the year. So we did decrease our cash if we compared with the previous year and our liabilities, and it's partly because of an increase in expenditure in discretionary funds. And then in terms of mandatory grants, we just want to report that when we analyze all the ATRs, or annual training reports, we noted that 338,000 people were being trained by companies, and different interventions were addressing several skills areas for salespersons, regional managers, cashier. There are green store persons and office cashiers. Just adding on mandatory grants, the CITA has close to 11,000 levy-paying companies, and we're just showing here that large companies are claiming most of the money, followed by the medium. It's the small where we are still insisting the claim rate currently sitting at. We have 68% of the companies claiming their money. In terms of the amount that they claim, again, this is an area that we're working very hard to improve to make sure that all our small retailers claim the mandate as well as they are entitled to. And then this slide just simply shows that over the 12 years, we've received close to 4 billion on levy, and we've disbursed or committed close to 3.6 billion. But what is important to note is that the discretionary grants, 135% is as a result of the mandatory grants which are not claimed, which are then subject to discretionary grants, and this enables us to have more projects to allocate funds to. And then, Chair, we've just highlighted one or two achievements, but the achievements are outlined in the annual report. In terms of discretionary grants, we were able to enroll 5,876 learners in the year. Although our target was 1,500, we just need to indicate that several projects which were approved in the previous year, the learners were enrolled in the year we are reporting. And in terms of qualified, those that qualified, there is no relation between 5876 learners and 2774. 2,700 are learners coming from the previous year. So we managed to qualify more than what we targeted for the And then I've already indicated that we've had an increase in participation on the mandate of the grant, and the addition of fuel retailers also increased participation. Now, in terms of discretionary grants, the board approved last year 636 million for discretionary grants. And currently, in fact, at the end of the year, we had 48 projects which were approved, and the total allocation of that is 803 million. Now, currently, we are just showing to the key projects that we have funds have been allocated to. We've got a project called International Development that takes 40 senior managers and expose them locally as well as internationally. We have a project called Retail Management Development Program, where we've registered 207 managers, and in fact we just graduated 189 of them last week. And then there was a big funding window called Discretionary, 327 million was set aside for that. And we've got 10 different windows in this grant. We're catering for rural development, SMEs, cooperatives, a total number of 20,000 beneficiaries are actually going to benefit from this this program. And this includes about 7,000 people that have gone through an AIDS awareness program. And then we bought a project for disability, 30 million is set aside, and currently, at the end of the year, there were 268 learners registered. We've subsequently registered all of them. And then earlier on, I referred to the bursary scheme. The minister approved 185 million for final year students, those that finished their qualifications last year. we're working in Nasfas on this one, but unfortunately, for the areas of qualifications that we were looking for, they were only able to provide us with information for 417 of these learners. So there is still a big gap there that they have not to date been able to give us enough students who qualified last year. They do have a big database, but we were looking at specific areas that have an impact on the wholesale and retail sector. So there is another Basel scheme, 153 million, where we put in 2,667 universities and FETs. And this group, we will basically take you then through their whole four or three-year program. And coupled with that, we will ensure that during their holidays, they are exposed to workplaces so that by the time they complete their degree, they've also had exposure to the workplace. And we know that in the past, our experience is that when young people have gone through workplace development or training, they are always the first candidates to be employed in our organization. So then we've got a project, Chair, called the Voucher Project. This one is for 8,200 SMEs. Basically, this is a project that is flexible for our SMEs. As we know, SMEs often find it difficult to sit in the class for 5 days, so they are able through the voucher project to go any time that they prefer to go. And then the last one is the assistance we give to small companies to complete their WSPs and ADRs, and there we achieved 7,686. Now, if you go through the annual report, you will note that our focus in our annual report was to celebrate the successes. So there are very interesting success stories that we've shared with you in the report. It's not conclusive. There are hundreds of these stories that we can almost write a lot of books about. Now, in terms of the annual, the Auditor General's report, Chair, which is something that you asked us to also focus on, we do want to say to this committee that this is the first time in the history of the CETA that we've had a qualification. And I think the qualification, as you can see, is more around completeness and accuracy of the balance of contracted and commitments. I did indicate earlier that we have 803 million which has been committed for projects. And during the audit, the auditor basically wanted us to give an accurate reflection of how much of the 803 million was committed in contracts and how much was just committed but not contracted for. And this is an area that we fell short, and we do recognize that it's an area that we have to fix. In fact, we've put all plans in place to ensure that the contract register, which is actually the document that the auditors were unhappy about, is actually accurate, and all the contracts we currently have close to about 600-700 contracts that we manage under discretionary grant, and this is an area that we fell short on. And then if you go through the auditor's report,
just for my report, you say you've got 6,700 contracts.
Now we've got close to 700 contracts.
Are you not sure?
I'll ask my CFO to help me. But they are in the region of 700, and the idea of this qualification was that we were supposed to have a very clear report as to how much of the 803 million is committed and how much is contracted for, as contracting is an ongoing process. But my CFO can give me the actual number.
Let's just stop there and talk about that. these contracts. Because it's not a small statement for the AG to say you can't account for 800 million. It's not a small statement for us. It's anarchy. Let's just talk about that. How many projects do we have? For how much to whom? If you can explain that. The minister, I'm sure, is listening. Sources. Why should we have these people? South Africa's wage was killed. How can they pay it? Let's talk about that. I think that's the key issue that we should talk about. If you met me a little later, you were talking about buzzards and so on. I'm very, very, very keen about buzzards, and I've got deflected. The success story of the AG is this discovery that you as a Zeta cannot account for a contract. AG, I mean, serious about that, and we are very serious. Let's hear the CFO explaining on the project. In fact, we will spend the next 80 minutes on the project. That's what we are here for.
Okay, I think if I said when I started, we do take this matter seriously. Given the fact that this is the first qualification that we as a CETA has received in the 12 years of the CETA, it's something that has also not been a pleasant experience. But I think the important thing to note is that we have 48 projects to which 803 million is allocated. The issue about the contracts is that the Auditor General requested us to provide them with a listing of all these contracts together with checking the payments that have gone through the contracts. And perhaps the CFO can explain that. Our accounting system was not set up to record each contract. This was a separate system that we are using to record the contract. That you want to.
CFO, you know the AG does not need a system, and the committee does not need a system. If you can just. When the AG comes to office and say, here are the contracts, 700,000 papers, here they are, and we show them, the AG, they say, for this amount, where is the contract? You offer them, and you can locate a particular project on the ground. Don't be happy. They might say, you are not storing your papers very well. They might say, you are not advanced, but they'll be happy that you've accounted. Okay. If you check page 61 of your report, it says that you transact goods and services above half a million without inviting competitive bids. That's about law. It's simple. That's not a system. You just know that this is above the street amount for quotations must be a public tender. This is CETA for the first time. The very fact that I say for the first time, it means there must be action. But that is regression. Who is in charge of procurement here? Let's see. Why is that?
If I may, the major part of this was more related to the procurement of offices, where we actually deviated by going on a three-fold process. This obviously was caused by the fact that there were challenges actually in getting property, so it took forever. So the...
Was there a public tender?
No, you did not go out on a public tender, but you went on a free
How much was involved?
Well, there were varying amounts for various offices. Most of them were above the 500 million range over the period of 3 years.
Let's be very specific. How much was involved?
I think it was close to about 3 point something million, if I may go to the page, Chair. In terms of property, it was 3.2 million for about, nine offices.
Who did that?
Excuse me, what is
it? Who has done this? Who has entered into this transaction? That's our question.
Hey, can I assist, perhaps? I'm not sure it's important to give a context why we did not go out on public tender. Because the finding here is that we should have gone on public tender for these offices. I hope the committee will recall that when the CETAs were re-established for the third time, when the new Minister of High Education and Training came on board and CETAs were placed under his responsibility, you will recall that the first year there was an extension of the CETA landscape. I mean, the NSD is two. And that allows the minister to basically put in place NSD is three and announce the new landscape of CETAs. So by the time the new landscape was announced, we were already extending our contracts with our leases because we normally do not contract beyond the NSD period. So when that extension of 1 year was made, we arranged with our landlords to allow us to extend on a month-to-month basis. Now, we could have gone on public tender for the offices, which is required by law, but the circumstances were such that we had to get the offices so that there is no disruption in the operations of the CETA. And so we went for the three-code route to ensure that we can secure offices in a short space of time because the old landlords were not prepared to hang on for a long time. So I think that is the context. We are aware we did not comply, but I think on the other hand, we went on a three-code system, and that's why we got a finding from the Auditor General.
Is that the only transaction? Let me just check. Is that the only transaction in which you went above the threshold of 500,000?
No, the other area is in the 500 base pay. Those are the only. That's the only area. Sorry.
It's fair to tell us everything because we are still going to request a lot of information about this project. We are going to require of you to furnish us with a complete detailed report on all your projects. How much is involved, for what type of project, how many people, names. You know why we are going to require that? In the public services, that people will pay their uncles and sisters, saying that, Lena. Now, we are going to really interrogate this report. Now, I'm asking, how many other projects have you gone beyond the threshold? And if you are honest, just tell us, because we don't have to run after that information, because once we do so, head will roll. The better tell the members here.
Thank you. Apology for just being late.
Chief, I'm just saying the justification for the CEO is not proper. Well, if you extend the contract by month-to-month basis, you do it because you want to allow a space of putting tender processes in place. Because I believe that you know very well that once you have a lease agreement, before it expires, you follow correct processes. But once you fail to follow correct processes, you start extending a month-to-month basis. Thereafter, you require three quotations. Honestly, it doesn't make sense. Because I don't know whether I can hear the people correctly that today. You also, you know, procured, and this was a 3-year contract that you signed again. That means this thing was done deliberately, you know, to ensure that the even if recognition but it's 3 years. Because you're already putting a legal obligation to say the sitter will never go to an tender. But it will be, you know, shaped in terms of agreeing in terms of that amount of money. Because according to the Public Financial Management Act that you should be able to put all perspectives, I mean all the processes in advance because you are preparing for, you know, all these other things. When the minister changed from NSS to NSS3, it doesn't necessarily mean that your plans of operation should stop. But it says, get alert. What are the systems that you have in place that must be able to respond to?
Yeah, so maybe just to reiterate that the extensions on month to month was after the first phase of when NSDS2 ended, all our leases were ending with NSDS2 because we don't contract beyond an NSDS period. Now, you will recall that the minister actually gave CITAS an extension of 1 year to be able to give him time to do NSDS3.
I'm so very clear on that one.
Yes.
Let me answer this one. How many other projects are there where the amount of 500,000 rands was exceeded?
Maybe just to come back to you on that. The 500,000 has to do with administrative expenses, so your leases will fall under that. But under projects, we don't have that occurrence.
But that doesn't answer me. Very clear, are there any other projects in which we transacted about 500,000 without a competitive bid? Yes or no?
No, there isn't.
Okay. Yeah. Let's go to basic two. You have a contractor here who did not perform in terms of your agreement for about 1.6 million. Who is this contractor? Have you recovered the money?
Actually, the contractor here is, the name is not here, but it's a provider called Silvex Training, CC. They were actually delivering adult basic education on behalf of the CETA. And when the certificates were issued, as they are normally issued by IED, we discovered actually that they were not issued by IED. So we added the contract and we took the legal route to recover this money. We registered the case with the police in Brooklyn and we issued a civil claim. So So where things are right now, Chase, this amount of 1.6 million is being handled by, it's going through the sheriff process. But we've from our side, we've done what is legally required to do of the authority to register the case with police.
Before Dina, in your report, there's another provider who we are not able to locate, who's contacted with you. I would like to understand who is this provider who can't be located when we've got a contract with this provider and the auditors have got an issue with this provider.
Yeah.
Before then, maybe let me take it, Honorable Gina.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, with all the questions that are arising around the issue of finances and whatever, on the agent's report, we get the summary where the AG commenting on the leadership and also on the financial management of the gold seeker, where the AG comes up with the witnesses on the issue on the side of the management and the issue of managing and monitoring and evaluation. My question would be, Chairperson, if the management, the teacher can come out clear as to say, do they have any finances, do they have any difficulties around the issues of finances? Because really, for us to come up with so many questions, it shows that indeed there is a problem. Maybe they can just be open up. They can just open up to us and say, financially, when it comes to financial management, are they experiencing any difficulties so that we understand exactly what are the challenges that the teacher has? Because really, what we are saying here shows clearly that there are challenges, there are difficulties that the teachers are encountering. Unless if they say there are no challenges, it means whatever we're getting gained because they need deliberate. But for me, if ever we can get there, are there any challenges around the issues of management within the sector so that even the ministry's offices here can all come together and say our best can assist the sector that is in front of us with all the challenges that they're coming up with. Thank you.
I'll agree with you, Gina, if the CFO, the CFO earns 1.5 million. He's a competent expert on matters of finance and the PMA and its regulations and the practice notes. I don't think we would need such an answer. We just need accountability on the part of the sitter. Yes, let's go.
Chair, my name is Michael Lawrence. I'm the chair of the Finance Committee and an Exco member. And if I could just respond directly to the question raised by the Honourable Member and say that there are clearly different matters, and we just need to be very clear here. There's an issue around the property lease. There are the concerns raised, which the CEO has just indicated, around investigations in progress, which are matters which we believe have been adequately addressed through the appropriate legal and civil means. And then, Chair, there is this concern which is on the accountability of the projects. And as a board, the board has been placed now for a year, we've made the necessary investigation. We at this stage, Chair, of the view that as the AD has indicated, while there is not sufficient information to satisfy the AG, we have put the necessary systems in place to begin reconciling each and every single one of those 700 contracts. Chair, you will appreciate that is not an overnight process, but the board has insisted that is a matter which will be not just a case of record keeping or systems that may or may not be appropriate. We will narrow down exactly down to the last tenth. We have done some investigation in respect of how systems are transitioned between record keeping, between hard copy, and between various software systems, and there were challenges there. We have satisfied ourselves to date, Chair, as the board, and the chair of the audit committee is on my right hand side and can speak further to this matter, but we have satisfied ourselves to date that once we have had the opportunity to go through all the dusty corridors of the rooms that contain these records, we will be satisfied. There are to date no issues that are concerning us, Chair. But we do believe, in answer to the member's question, that we have the appropriate competence. Yes, there were breaches in our system, and we need to take accountability for that, new boards or not, old and experienced people or not. We have to take collective responsibility for that there. But those matters are being urgently and constructively addressed right now, and we do not believe we have a concern in respect of our competence and capacity.
I'm listening carefully to the explanation given to us, but I'll just wish that the President takes us through number 2062, numbers 25 and 26, where it spells clearly what the problems are. What do these mean? Because it says there are control systems in place, but contrary to what is being said down there.
Thank you, sir.
Other members? I take it that even though the presentation was not concluded, we are already in the position to can pose a few questions with regard to what we have presented, as well as what is in the annual report. So we are in the position to ask those questions. And I just want to check a few of those so that we are clear in terms of what's been. The first is that there's an acknowledgement that the internal audit is outsourced, and the issue will be, why do you continue to do that? Why can't you have in-house kind of a unit that is able to deal with that? And that part of the confession is to say that the system of internal control was only partially efficient and effective. And you may need to explain to us why that and what have you done thus far. Are you able to deal with this kind of an issue? Chair, on pages 10 and 11, where their program has been explained, whether they've achieved or not achieved some of the targets, I think there's confusion there. With regard to the number of learners, the last one on page 10, and the, let me say, yes, on 4.2.3.2, as well as 4.2.3.2 on page 11. The other says it has been achieved, the other says not achieved, and it talks to the same number. Are you able to explain to us what are you referring to? Coupled with that, Chair, on the amount that goes for per learner is 70,000 across board. Are they just in one particular institution or various institutions, and why the amount remains the same? If you got the pages, I think you'll be able to locate what I'm talking about. Are you with me on that one? Page 10 of the annual report, as well as page 11. And I'm referring to the number of learners, 1,500 learners who qualify. We're talking of the same one, and I'm seeing there's confusion, because when you look at the two, the other says it has been achieved, the other says not achieved. And there's confusion there. The third issue, Chair, when you look at the challenges, rural development initiatives, is said to be one of the challenges. But on the annual report, on page 66, paragraph 5, it says there's a claim there that says if the visitor has implemented several rural development initiatives and it's striving to increase efforts in this particular regard, why then is this a challenge? If at the end of the day you plan to even increase efforts in that regard, meaning you are able to do some work there. Are you able to share with us what becomes your challenge? The last one, sir,
is that of the 31 planned targets, only 14 were achieved, which translates into 55% of those not having been achieved. How do you explain that? Yes, thanks.
Sure, I have one question. It's around the issue that you raised as well. Page 92. The last sentence. The second supplier also contracted to deliver skills training and was paid 1.6 million, but did not meet the contractual obligations. This is not under litigation as the supplier could not be located. What is the CETA talking about? What do they mean? Supplier cannot be located. What do they mean when they say the issue is not under litigation? How are they going to retrieve 1.6 million if there is no litigation?
All supplier, not bad. That's it.
Chairperson, thank you. I'm just confused because there are so many things that you cannot follow or understand. There are no specifications. Like people say, partnerships with other. Instead of maybe telling us partnerships with this and this and this sector, so that we can understand. But when you say other, there are no specifications. Thanks.
Let me avoid the God answering because I'll be harsh on the board. I'll flag the officials to answer. The board will come. Because a specific answer that the board will give at the end, the logic to all these matters are raised.
The litigation and us not being able to find these providers. When we followed the legal route and got, first we registered the case with the police, and secondly we had the civil claim against these individuals. When the sheriff went to go and look for these individuals, they were not found at the address which was in our contact. We haven't abandoned this. In fact, we've asked the sheriff and the lawyers to use whatever means, legal means, that they have to trace this individual, because for instance, the one provider comes from Bloemfontein, and when they got there, the office was actually closed, so they're trying their best to locate these people. We are pursuing to retrieve these funds. In fact, we've even asked the police again to please help us, because we registered the case. The first one was registered about 2-3 years ago. We haven't had much progress. The other one for 4 million is being handled by the Hawks. So I think that's the extent to which we want to recover the money of the CETA, because it's a public fund.
I think of those cases, so that we can trace whether indeed we are dealing with this people, or we're just reporting for the sake of compliance. Would need the case numbers of this investigation. Would need the names of these companies must come out. Let's know about this. You might find that these companies are continuing to work in other places. Let's hear who are these companies, their names, so that in this parliament we record in our records that this is a man known as Ishmael Bibi, sued by this seat for training.
Yeah, we can provide the details. We do have a case number 4. for these cases. Sure, may I ask the CFO and perhaps our COO if he could respond to the questions on the performance report.
Okay. In terms of the question of the outsourced internal audit, despite the fact that the internal audit is outsourced, they more or less work like a part of the city because they report quarterly to the audit committee. What it means is that now in each and every quarter they will work that they would have to do if they have to report to the internal, to the audit committee. So basically it's, they do operate within the organization.
The better answer is we will create capacity within this bureau. We don't want to hear that. We know that they're milking the system. We need to do. There are many graduates that are unemployed in South Africa, in that field. Again, even if you free them to check whether they're qualified, other than these companies that you are giving a lot of money to. That's what the parliament is saying. Employ people, that's what we're saying. Employ people instead of those companies. That's why the answer would not help us. Let's answer to the question of this details that Makuel asked. I think that is the one that must really attend to now.
Can we ask the COO?
Jake, good morning. I'm the COO. The question on page 10, 11 of the minus figure that were not achieved, you will see that they are bursaries that was made available, and it was bursaries that was made available through NSFAS, the National Student Financial Aid, and unfortunately they didn't allocate all the money to the students at the time of reporting that we have budgeted for. Hence, we couldn't report the actual figures that we originally wanted to. At the time of reporting, that was the only number that they have made available money to. I'm not sure if that's understood.
You will provide us with a list of all students that we gave vouchers to in the FET sector and the universities, and also indicate which universities that are attached to. Give us a record of all the contracts you have, detailing the types of contracts and the amounts involved and the companies involved. Within 3 months, we'll call you back here. I'll give my colleagues to engage with some questions.
The question I've asked is that there's also confusion. The number of students on both pages is 1.5. And I'm saying, on the other page, it says achieved in terms of the achievement following. The other one says not achieved. Are you explaining the not achieved one? The achieved one, why duplication?
Okay, maybe I can help there, Chair.
The
two types of organizations that we are using for bursaries. The one is NASFAS, and the reason that was not achieved was because the contract was signed in March. The second provider is the one that has registered all the thousands learners. So for the financial year, there was 2,667 bursaries set aside. 2,000 of those were for university students, and 670 of them were for FET colleges. So what we are saying is that we've achieved the 1,000 from one provider, but the NASFAS one is because of the contracting process. And I'm sure you are aware that their CEO started last year in November, round about that, and we had to pick up negotiation. So we have signed the contract, and we are also reporting currently what is the current status. So those are the 2,000 that seem to be confusing.
Because I think what will help us is to get a list of all these learners, and let's through our own research, track them down so that we can be happy that the city is working and giving bursaries to our students. So I've reported that you've got 11,000 levy paying companies. I mean, if each company could take one lender, for instance, for is 11,000, we could be very proud. My view, which is strongly held, that I'm beginning to be proud of the CETA system. I'm a hopeless optimist, but I'm beginning to be hopeless because of simply not following of the law. I mean, in terms of procurement, we must respect the law. And the explanation about, well, I'm sympathetic to the explanation, but the committee will still have to discuss and make recommendations in regards to what do we say as committee regarding lawlessness in this year. I think I saw a hand from the board. I think to the board, in the next 6 months, we're going to call you to hear what have you done at the board regarding this unlawfulness. Once we test your support, are you really a board? Are you coming here to give excuses on behalf of employees to the committee? Unfortunately, you cannot sit as a judge. I mean, if we are going to be sitting in judgment, you are going to be guilty, you know, and sentenced to 5 years in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. At the end, it says so. If records are missing, the accounting officer goes to jail for 5 years unless there are exceptional circumstances to reduce that period. All those take that judgment. Unfortunately, we are a committee, you can't take that judgment. So we'd like to raise the board within 6 months or and study this AG's report and the CETA. We have asked the department to organize a workshop with the Auditor General. We are prepared to come there to come and help you to actually draw up an annual performance plan. Because this report is not a proud report. A report where you clearly outline in a very succinct, focused way your strategic objectives so that you can monitor your progress and you achieve regarding skills development for this country. I think that is a serious concern we have. And we hope in that the department is busy organizing that workshop. We are very serious about this. You are antagonizing our committee. Our committee is a good committee. We are not very competitive people, but you are making us very, very sad because we are not delivering on our mandate. No skills development in the country, but billions of money have been spent. Every CETA comes to us, they say, we have got projects. But they can't tell us the sort of project they have. Their projects are suspect projects. Money is given to people who don't even know. You see, that's a problem. You do not even assess the sort of providers you give our millions to. And then you come to give us excuses. We don't know where these people are. We don't know them. You see, they're born from the beginning. These are suspect people. They are not giving accredited programs. They are giving our people certificates that are worthless. We are spending more than 800 million on nothing. And spend a few million on real batteries. So that can help our people to achieve, self-realization, self-development. I think that's a very serious concern for us. We will, together with the committee, discuss this and make specific recommendations in regard to CETA. And let's go to the second CETA. Let me tell you.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to know the relationship that this CETA has with the FET graders. I mean the accessibility, having them being accessible with, for the learners and all the FET colleges. How are the working relations there?
Well, I think our relationship is on battery problems that we've allocated to the learners. But besides that, we've been working with FETs for
past 10, 11 years. I think it's fair to say that in the past we worked with all those FTs that were prepared to work with the seat. But in a new landscape, we're reaching out now to almost all the FTs that we are working with. And maybe perhaps an example that one can give is that in KwaZulu-Natal, just 2 months ago, we had a joint project with 5 FET colleges and ourselves, and we trained close to about 1,000 street vendors who we graduated. In fact, at a Kwini municipality was a partner also in this project. So there are specific projects that we have with FET. But maybe what we also need to say is that we are going to be looking at establishing what we call centers of excellence and KwaZulu-Natal is going to take leadership where they want to have in each of these colleges a hotel and retail academy. And that's how we believe that we will expand our presence in these committees. At a different level, CETA CEOs are working closely with the principals of FET colleges to see how we can improve on this relationship. We are busy finalizing an MOU with all the 50 principals, and we're going to, in a very short space of time, have a workshop with them on what are the programs that we need in the different colleges. There is a concerted effort at CETA level, but also as a WNR CETA, we also continue to implement our own initiatives. In the Western Cape here, for instance, last year we had most of the FET colleges, their final year students, were funded by the CETA together with the Department of Economic Development to put young people through a workplace experience or internship for 12 months. So these are the specific initiatives that we are undertaking. We do not believe it's enough, but we certainly can improve.
If I can speak. I'm very wondering about this next in Bloemfontein company. Are this company suppliers not supposed to be cleared by SARS before they can do whatever? They don't talk about this video. If they were cleared by SARS, is there no way of treating them to that tax certificate?
Yeah, no, we did have the documentation from SARS before we could engage them. But as soon as we discovered this fraud, they sort of disappeared. And that's when we asked the sheriff and police agents to go out and look for them.
Honourable Member, I think we must have a special discussion on this report, and they would request that you provide us with information regarding your lease argument that the auditor got concerned about, the names and details of all these people that you are not able to trace, so that you are able to take our decision.
I'm just thinking that if we transfer to trace companies, are we able, in terms of our systems, to trace the students themselves? Whether we can tell where they are, whether they are, whether they've been certificated, and so on.
I think you're close. What will help is that report requesting of all students that have been given by the report. But we can really go, as we visit the FETs, we can meet the students and tell whether they are passing or not. You know?
Let me not overexpose you and allow you to allow the second sitter to come and present. Let's answer to the Auditor General's report. Let us be focused on that, and you may give a synopsis of your achievements and so on within the 15 minutes you have, but focus on responding to the AG's report.
Honourable Chairperson and honourable members of the committee and everybody in the room, protocols observed. Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Mike Bullock. I am a board member of the newly formed FPNM CETA. We start with a sincere apology from our chairperson, Mr. Tipu Ngidi, who fell ill last night, yesterday afternoon, and couldn't make it today. He sincerely apologizes for that. We have with us today a board member, Mr. Derek Fredericks, the two of us from the board, and then our acting CEO, Mr. Begi Zulu, our CFO, Jim Azad, and our COO, Mr. P.K. Naika. The acting CEO will go through the slides, but I just want to set scene from the board's perspective. We are, and it covers the first three slides of the presentation, I'm just going to talk generally about them to not waste time. We are a uniform CETA, as you're aware. Three CETAs joined together, but one of the CETAs was delineated into three and separated. We were constituted as an interim board for 6 months to put us together and then started our work with the new board. And in that time, during the year, we have been challenged with taking those three going entities and working through all the processes with the 13 sub-sectors. So it's been a challenging time. During that process, to start the process of addressing the Auditor General's report, we were extremely disappointed as a board and have taken vigorous action around the issue, is that we discovered that there was documentation missing in terms of Ozzen's development going back a number of years. And in terms of that, we highlighted it. The auditor went through it, and we have an action plan in place, which we will tell you about. And it is to do with documentation and sign off the documentation around those artisan processes. So it was in the delineation and the working through documentation to put this organization together that we discovered that, and it goes back over a number of years. That and other issues have also left us in a situation where we had to put all the processes in place to be able to start our work correctly, and that has delayed significantly the granting of funds for discretionary projects, because we need everything in place to make sure that everything's accredited, and we're about to go ahead with that. And that is also an issue which targets our target versus our achievements. So it is really around that that has created that. But we're confident that going forward, we're in a really strong position to perform effectively. So with that, I will hand over to Mr. Egge.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and good morning to all members. At this stage, I mean, I would like to just quickly look at the achievements for theatre and then hand over to our Chief Financial Officer just to take us through the finances. And as already indicated by the Mr. Sherlock, we completed the structural amalgamation, and the focus now, also implemented sound financial and corporate governance and operational policies and procedures. So that has already been looked at. And then already he's spoken to the issue of the qualification to the FPL and later, which was the result of the apprenticeships and portion of our apprenticeships, which were inherited from a previous theater, the standard theater, which we put an action plan in place for. And we are actually looking at, by the time the interim audit commences in January next year, we would actually have completed this. It has been quite a lengthy process. And then we also then combined with monetary grant requirements, and we were able to actually disperse about 55% of what was allocated for monetary grant, which then benefits about 1,055 families. And if you will allow me just to turn over to our CFO.
Good morning, Honourable Members, Honourable Chief. And just to take you through the first bar chart. So administration of the income we received just under 36 million. And we managed to stay within our 10% on admin spending, which I think was quite an achievement considering all our costs that had to be incurred to the amalgamation of our three teachers. 173 million was received for mandatory grant income. Of that, we paid up 55% to just over 1,000 firms. Our discretionary income totaled 65.4 million. During the year, we invested funds at the CPD, the Corporation for Public Deposits at the Reserve Bank. Moving to our donor funding, now the donor funding was inherited from the three amalgamating teachers. 637,000 was spent for the KZN DD budget. For NF funding, we spent 2.8 million during the year. 770,000 was spent on a collaboration project with WMR CETA on learnerships. If you look at the training layoff scheme, UIF funds, 2.6 million was spent, and that was for the training rounds component of the training layoff scheme. 2.3 million was spent on training costs from WMR CETA donor funds during the year. And then we looked at another additional amount from DHET, which we spent on the training allowance portion of the DLEs. Looking at our expenses, I've already addressed the administration expenses. We were within our 10% of 31 million. Management grants, as I said, was 55%. 93 million was spent, and that included an accrual which was paid out in June the following year. Our discretionary expenses totaled 36.1 million. And naturally, like I've already covered, the challenge is there spending those funds. We also had the delineation of a math teacher which needed to be concluded before the end of the financial year. We also had the committees put in place and proper corporate governance procedures in place to ensure that that process was done correctly. Despite all of those challenges, we still spent just under 37 million. Looking at our discretionary reserve, there was a total of 359.5 million reserved at the end of the financial year. We've committed 102 million of those funds owing to the challenge that I've previously stated, and going forward into the next financial year, we've put processes in place to ensure that far more of those funds are committed. Looking at our fixed grant funding. 250,000 was allocated to postgraduate studies. 60 million was allocated to learners and skill programs, and 12 million was allocated to arts and training. We look at the next slide. This is for special project funding. Funds were allocated. 2.7 million was allocated to sector skills learning. 7.4 million to sector priority during the year, and then 5.6 million was allocated to support ECT colleges. So for skills development in rural areas, we allocated 5.8 million. 2.8 million was allocated to support people with disabilities, and 5.7 million was for projects for the collaboration with sector organizations, and finally 7.3 million was allocated to internal and other projects. I'll now hand over back to Marcy, HFU. Thank you.
Any questions on the members before we release the sitter? You see, when we give bursaries to students, we'll be happy. When we don't contravene the PFMA and its regulations, we'll be happy. And we would like you to really address the problem of the information that is missing. As you mentioned, we sympathize with you. Jimmy, is it good to say, whatever?
Let me first. Oh, okay. No, Chair. Probably, if I can get the. Can you talk to Mike? Yeah. Just a brief explanation. I'm trying to. This page, I forgot what page was it. But it speaks in terms of the that you couldn't be able to achieve your problem around about 51% of your planned work, planned target. I'm trying to understand what were the probably most specific challenges that made you not to achieve this challenge, this target, and probably what are your future plans? I intend to address them. And your internal audit committee, I'm not sure how effective it is, because the other one says you are not sure effective as the challenges to you know, comply with the international regulations. Yeah. Peter, did you? Yeah.
Chair, just to take it from where Honorable Hadeva left on the internal audit function. It says it was appointed, meaning in my own understanding it was outsourced. And therefore, we may need to understand when will that become a real internal function. There has been no risk assessment conducted thus far, and the Auditor General does indicate that the internal audit did not fulfill its responsibilities. We may want an explanation in that particular regard. The second issue, Chair, I think we appreciate the smooth transition from all the other sitters or through the amalgamation of the major process. I think that's commendable. Would have expected challenges in that regard, but apparently it was well managed. I just don't know whether the sitter does not want to share with us anything as far as really there has been no challenge at all. And you think you have overcome that particular challenge, or there are issues. But of a major concern in that regard, Chair, is those individual sitters, before they merged, were responsible for particular students' funding and so on. What happened to them? Have all of them been taken on board, or that resulted in challenges in terms of continuity and taking care of the interests of those students who were there? The CETA spent about 3.7 million on consultants with regard to issues on HR, management of salaries, and financial and accounting services, and so on. We checked if you were being assisted to ensure that there are policies relevant and so on and so on, that could have been. I would like to see this being reduced. It was necessary at this point in time, or
this particular year. Those times it may be too much that I'm to spend on service, on consultant in that particular region. But I think you will need to inform us of what you will do in that regard. Part of the responsibility of this state of chair, although my case is lost now, but I can talk to the issue, is that they need to be able to provide skills development support to new ventures, to small firms, informal sector, cooperatives, community-based organizations, and other generating initiatives for the unemployed. I know that there's a project in Mitchell's Lane and there could be other, but I want to know how you're going to be expanding and what challenges are there. But often, Chair, you find that small firms can't afford to undergo training or whatever because of their very nature. You know, people must be there forever in their own businesses and running them by themselves because of a limited capacity to run those institutions. How do you find it? Are you making any breakthrough? Because to us, this is very important to ensure that cooperative and community-based organizations for the unemployed are taken on board. And I would want to understand more in this particular regard. Thanks, Chair. I may come back if we have to.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the honourable members for the question. Starting with the question that relates to the targets that were underachieved by 51%. The main reason here, in fact, there's two. The first one, I think the nature of the situation that we found ourselves in meant that the main focus had to be given to the amalgamation process for the 6-month period, whilst we were trying to also run the CETA. And at that point in time, we didn't have a firm structure that were in place, especially at operational level. So we're working as on the basis of task teams. The other issue then relates to the fact that, given the fact that we had to look at policies being put in place and structures being put in place, which now we actually, you know, harmonized, you know, we're harmonizing what the previous sisters had in place. It then was important that before the board could actually commit any funds, could allow us to commit funds to projects, we had those structures and those systems in place. We only could actually allocating opportunities for projects in November, December, which then meant that by the time the year came to an end, the financial year came to an end in March, most of the projects or the memorandum of agreements or the contracts were still in the process of being signed off. We are expecting that come in this financial year, 2012-2013, there's going to be an improvement in that area. And the other area that is also going to take in that regard is the fact that recently the board has approved, after the next investigation was done and also the funds from the other previous sectors were confirmed after the audit, we then have been able to allocate about 150 million rand fairly recently. The board will be approving the projects. We've already done the evaluation, which will now be allocated. That should actually help us to then, you know, increase the number. Now, coming to the second question that relates to the internal audit in terms of it not being effective. Given the fact that one of the sitters that, you know, matched into FPNM sitter, which was the clothing and textiles, footwear and left sitter, previously had used the services of a provincial treasury, which they found to be cost effective, given the fact that they had limited resources, and then they were actually doing it almost, you know, at no cost. They had to cover just a few items. The board took that decision to say that because we want to be prudent with the utilization of our finances, it would actually then help us if we were to, again, request the same provincial treasury to continue with that kind of a function. And for, unfortunately, there was an agreement that was in place, but for whatever reason, I mean, it didn't seem to show much commitment. And then there actually then impacted on the internal audit function. I mean, not much ground was actually covered by the service provider, which is the first trader that we actually rely on at that point in time. What then subsequently happened is that they went the route of saying, let's actually get on board a service provider. We do have an individual within our theater, a manager who is for risk, a risk manager who then helps with the coordination of audit function. When we did some analysis, we realized that at a point in time, it was going to be more expensive if we were to actually do internal observation entirely, I mean, within CETA itself, because it means more hands that need to put on deck. It's an area that we will then review as we go forward, and I think we've picked up some ideas, which would be the presence of the team of CETA, you know, coming from the members, that another area to look, maybe to even look at, I mean, the graduates who are employed, but who do have those kinds of skills. It's something that will address into our plans. But in terms of the current arrangement, the internal function that service provider that brought on board, working closely with our risk manager, they have indeed covered a lot of ground. We are confident that when the interim audit commences in January, we would have actually covered all the key business units within the CETA. So far, the reports that have actually come through have given us a sense of, you know, a lot of things being in place, but they are actually picking up a lot of things. We believe that also when the auditor general comes on board, they may put reliance on some of all those reports and most of the stuff, most of the gaps that would have been identified by the internal auditor who have actually been addressed at that point in time. With the internal audit function, what happened to that during the amalgamation process? At that point in time, we felt, given the fact that, I mean, the risk assessment process could also be quite involved, that we basically had to rely on the risk assessments that had been conducted by the three previous CETAs, and this is the first time that we had systems in place, in which case that we're then going to now go through a rigorous risk assessment process. One of the expectations from the internal function was also the fact that, I mean, they're going to help in that regard with the risk assessment, you know, so that we can actually build capacity internally. Currently, we are actually wrapping up on the risk assessment that relates to the operations of the CETA, and then the board is meeting on 28th, so we've requested them to actually add another day. They're meeting on the 27th to just look at now the strategic risk assessment, which would then mean that, I mean, by December, would actually have sorted out the issue of risk assessment and would have actually identified our top risks and then begin to look at plans in terms of managing those. And then in terms of the transition that we went through as a CETA, whereas it was actually a bumpy ride, because things maybe we stepped in then, you realize that, I mean, in certain areas, your expectation was not exactly what would have happened. One of the things, I mean, that we were expecting was that perhaps there would be a clear plan, you know, maybe from our principals to say, do 1, 2, 3, 4. Then they were quick to tell that, I mean, that plan relates to us. So we had to then look at the plans that had been put in place by the previous CETAs in anticipation of the amalgamation, and then start moving forward. So we did have a lot of ground, and then I think, I mean, at the stage of the game, one can confidently say that, I mean, the CETA has actually stabilized, it has actually settled down. I think the areas that we're now basically dealing with would be around now trying to hone in terms of the culture of the organization, because you've got staff members and even board members who come from the different sets that now need to work as well. But we've got a lot of ground in that regard. In terms of learners that were in the system, we actually ensured that all learners were actually put in terms of our plans. We actually identified each CETA to present a list of all the projects, all the learners in the system, all the providers that were in the system, and so on and so forth. The only area that I must say, I mean, we're still grappling with right now relates to certification, especially, I mean, when it comes to learners that were with the CETA. What happened when we then, you know, we hit with that problem is that around the time that some CETAs learned that the CETA was going to be dissolved, it's then that you had a rush of most of them handing in documentation. And given the fact that at the stage, a lot of staff members within that CETA had actually left, I think, you know, out of fear that they might be jobless. Then, I mean, in the executive department in particular, you then had your staff members, and apparently certain things were allowed in. Like, for instance, someone who had trained learners previously and then dumping their documents now without any due diligence being done to check whether they've got everything in place, including, I mean, the fact that those learners were in this race that, you know, previously, on time. So that has then resulted in a few, in some certificates having to be then processed, and there are challenges in terms of those providers who believe that they've completed the program. If you follow your quality assurance process, you realize that, I mean, there's still some steps. But at the same time, you're looking at now not disadvantaging the learner who seems to have actually done what I was expecting on their side. So we've actually then put together with the CAT CETA, the Culture Arts and Sports CETA, as well as the MICT CETA Media Information, to actually look at the project in terms of what data needs to be split up so that it's processed on their side, especially when it comes to learners that have completed beyond April 2011. And then we are then as FPM CETA on behalf of the CETA, we then have to deal with those that concluded in terms of the records before the 31st of March 2011.
Honourable members, if I could answer the two questions on consultants and the challenges going forward that we as a board are concerned about. The concept is that each CETA that we amalgamated had an MIS. Each CETA had full stop. Each CETA had systems and processes. So we took the opinion that we should take best practice and try and maintain some form of continuity. In some cases, we have made mistakes, and we have found that for consultants, for instance, the three different management information systems have cost us those consulting fees. And we are now looking at going forward. And that is probably our biggest challenge going forward. We've taken Treasury advice and various other advice on that. We are going out to full tender on the process. It has delayed issues and the complications of having these three systems, combining everything from an information and keeping a going concern going. If any challenge is our Achilles heel right now, it's the information system, and we are working very, very hard on fixing that. Otherwise, we believe we're confident with that process. Thank you.
And we should not ask our chief operating officer to respond to the question as to SMEs and cooperatives and new venture creation. Thank you.
But the other ones to ask, and then we close.
Roger. You know, I've been busy trying to look at some of the data that, you know, this committee is very passionate about checking. The issue of gender balancing, I don't see any particular report around this matter. The issue of addressing the disability sector, if we can be able to get, you know, some sense. The issue of the transformation within this sector, because you should remember that This is one of the sectors that being dominated previously by some of the minority people, whereby you find that some of the other sectors are not, you know, they are not able to participate, because those are some of the other things that if I can be able to get probably related to the other sectors as well. If they can be able to tell us in terms of their strategy. How are they accessing the previous disadvantaged communities? Who are they giving these business? I think that's one of the questions you've asked earlier. Who are these people who are giving training? Because you might find that some of the people, they are being closed outside of this threshold because of the procurement processes that, you know, are within inside there. And they are being closed out to participate. But what is happening? We don't get any response around that. Thank you.
Good. The first question I asked on the what happened to leadership, and I think might have focused more on local ones. Do we have those who may be doing or studying internationally, either in the master's degrees and so on, who have been captured in terms of any of the hitters that I had? But the second, Chair, there's no spending on RPL. Regardless of funds that have been budgeted on it, what's happening in terms of those parallel processes. In most cases, RPL is there in name in most of the institutions. There's no real work or focus or real commitment to ensuring that it happens. Are you able to account for why there's been no spending in a parallel record when there are so many people who could be RPL without difficulty?
Thank you, Chair. If I may just allow the Chief Operations Officer to just summarize on the issue of the SMEs and the LRPL.
Good morning, Honourable Members, Honourable Chair. Thank you very much for this opportunity. Basically, when it comes to SME development and cooperatives, it all relates to our rural development strategy, where 10% of our budget is actually dispersed with regard to rural development. And it's mainly that our SMEs, our cooperatives, our NGOs and CBOs that would benefit from that kind of a budget. In terms of a target, basically, if you look at our strategic plan, our annual performance plan, we have a target of supporting 20 of such entities. I would just like to state, be honest, that yes, there is a little bit of underperformance in terms of the number that we can actually support, but that is because of budgetary constraints and obviously the number of applications that we receive from such institutions. But going forward in terms of this year's DG applications, I can tell you that at least 3 times more than the target would be supported in terms of CBOs, NGOs, SMEs and cooperatives.
And then let me just respond quickly on the use of the previous disadvantaged individuals. We apologize that we did not include this information in the slides, but we do have some breakdown in terms of the numbers that were in our slides. In terms of the black males that employed, we had something like 791 as compared to about 21 who are white. And then those that are unemployed, we had about 641 black males unemployed, and then against about 13 white males. And then in terms of the...
Can we take note that it says males? These women are not considered males.
Sorry, Chair, I was going to come to females. Apologies for that. Okay. Now, in terms of black males, in terms of the girls that are there, we've got about 732 black females, and then versus about 4 white females. And then in terms of the unemployed, so those, the first group is unemployed 1,143 black females versus 12 white females. In terms of disabilities, we could drill down in terms of, you know, the areas, but the figures show us that those who entered the programs were 178 people with disabilities in terms of 2011-2012 versus those, and then those who completed the programs were 114. And one of these roughly is about 2%, which makes us to fall short of our 4% target. And I think I already indicated we do have some plans that we put in place to try and actually improve on this figure. Thank you.
The greatest problem that we have noticed is that the workplace skills bans are for malicious compliance in South Africa. Sheila, you must know that. Companies submit workplace skills plans for purposes of receiving what you refer to as mandatory grants. We don't even know what that money is used for. For the payment of skilled labor. I think something must be done about it. South Africa is going to do something about this. South Africa must think there are billions, Dr. Bojan, billions. That are being spent, we don't know what that money is used for. They are poorly paid skilled labor. Legislation must really be reorganized on this area. Comrades, whoever think about the interventions, probably make their discussions already. This is why we need intervention. Let me release the sitter and go to the next one, yeah?
I'm sorry, I will want you to listen, but I have two questions that have never been responded to. On RPL, which is a serious policy issue, and it shouldn't be just raised for the sake of it. We must see work done, and we must be told what is being done, or what is the explanation if there's no work being done. The other was with regard to international students, some of whom might have been part of the previous system that has now become this one. Now, what has happened to it?
Honourable members, those two questions are very relevant. The board is really concerned about RPL. RPL relies very much on the employers to bring the resources together to get people through RPL, and you can see in our scorecard that we are disappointed in those numbers. What we have got in our discretionary grant applications for this year is to increase the numbers of assessors and moderators in that field to try and pass that process through. So we have our plans in place for that, but it is way behind target. in terms of students, all students, be they international or local from the previous centers, have been taken on board and followed through with their processes, and we do have various centers that are more involved in international studies, being the CTFL CETA particularly. We do have master students in the Pulp and Paper sector as well that are involved with research universities in South Africa, and all of those students are on board and are in the new CETA process.
Before we can even think of legislation, the CETAs have got the responsibility to make sure that when employers submit their workplace questions, they actually commit to taking a particular number of learners, of apprentices, and so on. Let's make sure that happens. And that will realize our objective of ensuring that every workplace becomes a training space. Let's do that. Thank you very much. Let's go to the last year. Let's proceed. We hope that the fiber processing and manufacturing sector will appoint their CEO. We forgot to ask why I will empty, but we have passed out under the bridge in the last sector now.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members of the committee. My name is Nolita Fagude, and I'm the chairperson of the CETA CETA. I am accompanied by my colleagues from the board as well as from management. On my right-hand side with management, I have the acting CEO, Ms. Aisha Tsim, and also the CFO, Mr. Mutala. And then on my left-hand side, I've got Mr. Manene, who is a board member, the ministerial appointee. I also have Ms. Ingrid Dimo, who is the chairperson of the Special Task Committee of the Board and also a board member. I also have Ms. J.K. Glasson, who is also an EXCO member and the chairperson of the DG Discretionary Grants Committee. I have other colleagues here, including the chairman of the Audit Committee, as well as the chairman of our Governance Committee. Just start speaking with a context high level in terms of introducing the CETA and then presentation that will be led by our CEO. I think it's just important to create a bit of a context quickly for the committee in terms of where we have been as the CETA. And if you notice in the first slide that comes in, instead of talking about achievements, I start with challenges. Because in the 1 year, 6 months that we have been in place at the new board, that has kind of focused our attention. You can go to the next slide. We started in first of April last year, and in April this year we have been there for a year. And one of the challenges that we had was that we already inherited an organization where the previous CEO was on suspension the month before we were put in place,
and also then had to operate with the acting CEO, and that the time just to get the process of appointing a new CEO has also taken us a little bit longer than we had wished for, but again, we had to follow due process to be able to fill these positions. Also because of the long transition period between when we had some of the issues that came from the previous administration and the challenges faced by the organization to where we are today, we have seen a lowering of staff morale, but also sometimes more concerning a lack of discipline in terms of the employees just being things right in the organization. And in some instances, there's beginning to be suspicion because there was a report, which I referred to, called the EWC report, which had been instituted by the previous board just to look at some of the challenges that the organization was facing specifically around administrative issues. And because that report is both confidential and we are still working on some of that of those issues, employees sometimes wonder whether we are doing anything about them or not. Hence, this issue around the concern about the break of trust relationship between staff and management. Having said that, there's quite a few areas that, as a board, we feel very comfortable and confident with in terms of our achievements, because they start to talk to us getting the organization back on track. And the first one of those is that today I can sit here in front of you and say we really do have a board of governors that is actually quite effective and cohesive and very, very dedicated in terms of how they discharge their duties. Corporate governance was a major priority for the new governing board, and we have spent a lot of time just building capacity for the board members to understand our fiduciary duty and, more importantly, some of the nuances of our organization, also having been helped by some of the information that came out of the PwC report. So we had to focus on some of those issues, like, for instance, spending time on enterprise risk management and understanding what the challenges are for us as an organization, where are the gaps, and also some of the areas where we have to put in systems and processes. We are, as I had indicated, actively addressing PwC report findings through the audit committee assisting us with that process, but in some instances we have taken that outside of the organization straight into the mandate of the board by appointing a special board task team that has got a mandate to deal with the report, and in particular to look at closing off of the Section 14A that has been issued to the organization 2 years ago. Coming to some of the work in progress that still we're working on around governance, besides concluding on this PwC report, we have been working very closely with both the Department of Higher Education and Training as well as the NSA just to guide us through the process, and I'm sure within a very short space of time we will be getting the Section 14A matters closed, because our last engagements with NSA were quite encouraging in terms of how they see the progress we have made to prove off some of the issues. The recruitment process for the CEO is in the final stages. We are actually going to be submitting to the minister within the next 2 weeks a short list, and hope that by the end of this year we should be able to appoint a permanent CEO, which will help again with stability for the organization. We will continue to support management and staff to deliver on the chief mandate. And we do realize that the appointment of the new CEO or whoever would be the CEO will help. But more importantly, for us to continue to focus on the operational issues and projects that will assist us to make sure that the city delivers to its mandate. And the acting CEO will talk more about the programs and the initiatives that we have been running in the city through the annual report. But suffice to say that in conclusion, Chair, from the governing board perspective, we have a lot of energy and commitment to making sure that we make this CETA to be one of the best that we have. One thing I haven't mentioned, and she will cover in the report, the CETA is very proud that over years, 11 years now, we have had unqualified audits with no issues of material CETA being raised, and that we want to maintain and even get closer to a clean audit. Thank you, Chair.
The only unqualified report we have is from the committee regarding targets. Yes.
with an unqualified audit from the committee regarding tariffs. If you check on page 43 to page 53, there is where the speak of achieving the status, the speaking of over target, under target, over target, under target. You must stop using that language. there's no over target in South Africa, because we need to place as many students as all companies are able to accommodate. And that is an over target. Because we're part of Britain who say that we'd like to supply workforce for the entire Africa. And in 2030, we're apparently going to reach a bigger population in Africa. So let's sort that aspect out. Let's have a serious discussion about targets as the board and management. The reason why we call it is not because of your report. We did not find many things with your report. It's because of the fact that we have the media that you drink Heineken and Spice Gold, Red Bull bottles and Mainstay and Arula in your city. It's there. We met it in the media. This audit report which we called that as a committee we could not write a statement. We had to call you here to explain this to us, because we were worried that and I thought I was going to meet the person who was drinking this big stuff, and I was disappointed when we were announcing that there's an acting person here, because really, I sent out this report to members, and they could not sleep. They were studying this report to come and confront you on its content. And I'm a bit disappointed, because, but you must not clarify us. What have you done? What are your clear terms? Did you try it in any way, reflect that you are dealing with the issues? But we'd like to hear exactly what happened with the chairperson here. What happened? What happened with do you now have a policy on leave and so on? Have you recovered the money for the leave that was taken in terms of this report? I'm not having a problem myself, unless other members may, with the fact that you are in business class in the flight. I don't really care, you know. I just pass you there and go to the back there, and I know I will hold you accountable when you come here. So what is your policy saying now? Have you reviewed it so that you are thinking must not feel so reduced by that small seat of the plane and so on? I'm saying, as I do the report, just what have you done? Then we can close the meeting. Just tell us clearly, specifically, who was responsible, what have you done? Have you settled with this person, or is that a DC? I want to hear all those issues.
Yeah, well, Chairman, it's still early. You're making me thirsty now. Talking about something that is cope very well in my throat. So I salute. One of the other issues that probably she will be able to get. But you know, must be able also to acknowledge the manner in which the report has been taken. You know, it make me to struggle to find structure of our program and stuff to try to analyze whether the issue that you're crying about, the issue of gender parity, balance, whether it's better or not. And I really highly appreciate that. That's why we must be able to throw away, credit issue. But the other thing that I want to stress out is whether the salary scale level. And I got shocked when I saw that the CFO is earning more than the accounting authority. It makes me clarify for me the rationale on that, you know. Because I think it's one of the other things that one should be able to understand. So that when you query the other ones, the doctor, if the normal laborer can earn more than a CFO because of the, you know, responsibilities that one has, if you can be able to give that. Thank you.
Can we give them really to summarize, as we say, come to the point that we want to for? So now we are just concluding.
No, yeah. I think we'll focus them. They are going to respond. I'm telling them so that they'll not give us a presentation. You see, in the past, other member, they'll give a good presentation.
Yeah.
Now we are changing the approach. The approach is that we give the presentation. Ask questions on what we need so that you have prepared stacks of paper. We just say, no, we're happy living here, but we want this accountability. Now, that's fine. I want to allow the officials to summarize. He doesn't speak for long. We create a machine for us to interrogate them. That's good.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will start and then my colleagues here with me, in particular the board colleagues that we had mandated to chair the Stay Health Task team that was actually looking at how we close off this particular report. And she'll come in, and also the CEO as well. I think I must also give a bit of a disclaimer, Chair, before I get into some of the details so that you don't hit us for being vague in some instances. That report, because of its confidential nature in terms of some of the DCs that are taking place currently, it's been difficult to sort of speak about it openly. But I will try, and if we're not meeting those expectations, please do come back.
Don't worry, in Parliament, on matters of accountability, there's no confidentiality. Unfortunately, unless there are people who are affected, it will be good to hear from Parliament that there are serious issues against them. It's not a problem. You must become free and tell us. Just respond to the report without... there's not even this concept of drive-through, you know, in this committee. People will say, this is sub judice and so on. When it comes to Parliament, that concept does not apply. You just tell us everything related to accountability, and nobody can use evidence from our committee in a court of law. Are you aware of that? So it is our data, it's FCA, and then we are protected.
Thank you, Chair, for that. Well, let me start from the beginning. We, as I had indicated, the previous board had the reason to believe that they needed to put in this investigation, and so instructed PwC to conduct the forensic audit around certain issues that we are very uncomfortable with around processes in the organization, and we've got a report with you. This led to the suspension of the previous CEO, which happened in February 2011. And therefore we started with an acting CEO, Ms. Aisha, here with us in March 2011. In July 2011, throughout all the various DC and legal processes, the board agreed to settle with the previous CEO and reach an agreement for mutual separation. And so that process was closed. Then we went back to the report and identified some of the key issues that we needed to look at in terms of who are the individuals that we need to further continue looking at in terms of who are implicated or even identified by the report. And as we speak, we are in a process where we have held two DC hearings for two individuals. One of those has been concluded. The other one is still ongoing.
Who are these people? In Parliament, we speak by name. We don't speak in coded language. We want to know these people. You see, because we want not to appoint them in the future. We want to hear them. Who are these people?
The ones that are still undergoing disciplinary hearing.
Okay, Chair, the people who are currently undergoing a disciplinary hearing, or one of whose hearing has been finalized, is the person who was responsible for the grants, the head of the grants unit, and the other person was the COO, However, the president has since been dedicated to his original position. He has been still working within the current Senate and office. Okay, the names of the people is Mr. Romy Naidu, and the second person is Fraser, with Mr. Fraser Ernest.
May I continue, Chair? And the other issue, obviously, was to make sure that we scrutinize the discretionary grants process. And again, the board had a task team that looked and went back to some of the anomalies that have been picked up through forensic audit, making sure that where the files were not filed, where the files were incomplete, the forms were incompletely filled in, those were done, following up on missing addresses or mismatches in addresses, and even in some instances, making sure that we really kept every item that was raised around the discretionary grants process. And from a process perspective, we feel that that has been well concluded, and I've got the chairperson of the discretionary grants committee here with us, and she can maybe add in terms of if there's any other stuff that she needs to add on that one. But based on what was on the report, we have gone through all those. And as I say, this is one of the, sometimes when something bad happens, we say it gives you a gift and an opportunity. This is the gift for us as a board to be able to focus really on these things to make sure that they don't happen again. And part of that was to first understand what systems and processes and controls do we have in the organization so that we don't see a repeat of this. And some of the issues, it's also just pure concentration and people being there, attention to detail, and also having clear delineation of duties and making sure that we do the right things. And that's what we are now continuing to work on.
I think one thing serious for me, for all the sitters, is the issue of workplace safety plans. We must not approve plans that do not take our students. As soon as unemployed plans, we really need skill development in this country. And I don't think we must overemphasize that. We will leave that to Clive Mchisa and his team. Let's have that meeting where we clearly deal with the issue of our targets. Because our targets will justify a view that we must fire people in the sector and create one big mega sector with few people. Because when I look at the salaries of the employees of the sector, it is a disservice to South Africa. Because you place few students, but to earn big salaries. To justify existence, you must place as many students as possible so that the minister, the time he thinks of recertification, he is able to say, I'm impressed by this CETA on the basis of placement of this and that, the project they've executed, lawfulness in terms of your charter and practices in organization. I think that is for me regarding the CETA. Let's up our act. We will never tolerate any unlawfulness. When you take your flight back to Johannesburg for the 2 hours there, on your cell phones and iPads, open the Public Finance Management Act and read from the back where it says offenses to the fund and finish it. When you arrive in the office, print out the document referred regulations and go to a section of the accounting general and look for practice notes. Memorize them. Cram them. If you are not intelligent. And never ever contravene them. That is the message from this committee. We are really, really present. If you are in a theater and you spend over 500,000 rand without following the law, what do you expect? You must simply resign. Simply just resign and go. Because you are a person who doesn't believe in laws. It's despicable. Fair or square. You cannot keep a person who fails to observe such a simple thing. Don't show a public trend. We are not saying do not appoint whoever you think is relevant. Even if you think your friend is the best, but Solomon was Caesar. You can't use public money like your personal money. That is our concern. And we have fired our first holding short as a committee. We are a good committee, we are being turned into the enemy of the sitters by the sitters themselves by lack of accountability. Not following the law. I think this committee is not like the HAS. There are committees that call some departments every time. You know, the police, they are always there. And they account seriously. But you can call because there are too many. We will not call any sitter if they spend their money properly, if the targets are fair, we will only congratulate them in the house. Now, if you are going to be called again here, you must ask, if you are the CEO, you must come with a resistance that already sent to the minister, that's to account and leave. Because we are not going to tolerate. We are not going to make a recommendation that the minister must consider similar inquiry. We are going to start demanding a resignation first and criminal charges later. I think that is our message. We are not happy. The NPA has said that you don't provide the office with useful information. What is that? It means you do not determine proper targets, and in terms of a reportage, you don't read the report with a plan initially. Some of the rest of the sitter, which we are happy that you have acted on this CEO. But we are not happy that there was no DC, because you must find that this person is entitled to benefit, handshake, golden handshake, when this person was drinking our money. I know that Khadema can't afford this spice oil that has been mentioned here, in hotels. We don't have a problem with you drinking as long as it's your policy says you must drink. We will ask the AG whether it's proper. You know? So let's really not tarnish the image of this committee, the minister, and the country. Because we are not happy today what we are saying today. We are not happy. Let me allow the whip and then we close.
Chair, I think I want to echo your sentiments. Boards in corporate governance are there to govern the institution. If boards are sleeping, Honorable Chair of the board, you'll find this problem. You can't just wake up when there's a problem. I know the gift is a gift, but we must make sure that we have boards on the board. If we don't have board on the board, that's why when we appoint boards, we must appoint people who understand the role of corporate governance, who understand the role and the mandate they have to do. I'm reading one of the elements. You might think there's so small to talk about moral of staff, discipline, what is a board. If the leadership in an institution, whoever does not want to comply with the law of the leadership of the institution must go and lead. It's a full stop. There must not be a compromise. The government here, the board is mandated to run an institution, not with the capacity of staff. Staff is invited to come and work in that institution. We must understand that. We must draw the line between the two, full stop. Friendship, that and that and that, it doesn't work in that. That's why our things fail. That's why this sitters fail. We are so government, take an example of governance institutions of higher learning. How they are run. That's the kind of model we want. We can't tolerate output that is not there. If you are supposed to produce, they are not producing, please leave. They are not producing, they are wasting state payer money. The mandate is to produce these learners, quantitative who are paid somewhat. That's the mandate. It's very simple. But if you are not doing that, then you are not relevant. Might you exist
the main problem we're confronted with. What we're talking about is output, the value of output and the way money that we put there must have an output. But now I'm not going to celebrate and say everything goes well. We have said it's even the state of Sita. Even makes us to think whether it's the right direction in the state of having the Sita chairperson. As a community, you must even think beyond, not only think legislation, think whether is it the right time in which the country we're taking. Maybe that's most being a question that we should be at least be engaged more. But as long as we still exist now, we must make sure boards, now blame boards, not blame CEOs, blame boards that there's proper governance in this city. And then we must make what there must come a time in this country. I think there's an act of board of officials that are not even liable. If you are board of chapter, you're failed to take over part of an institution, and the rest of man, even the chaplains themselves, must account and see the law. I will make only the employees, because we give you trust, you sign and take an oath that you're going to perform this duty within the constraint of the law of the Republic of South Africa. Now, if the chaplains, they come there, as the people who bring Amarula, they also bring wine, and they think it's nice. Now, we must start to take action also on the members of board and chaplains in lack of them doing oversight. I'm not saying this chaplain is doing why, but I'm saying generally. Yeah, thank you.
Chairperson, thank you. Maybe let us not even spoil the confusion that you have come up with, of which it has put clearly the stance of the committee. Let us say, really, we want to see our people being filled out there. Yes, we must commend and congratulate those who have done well, as we have seen them. But again, Chairperson, I think it's good. Maybe we need even to broaden this, where we have got a number of sitters under one roof. I think it does assist, just like today, where we have got a sitter that you are not happy at all about, so that they can even know that there are sitters that can perform well. And I hope to even assist other sitters to say, if others can do well, why did it just ask? Because really, we're all complaining around the issues of skills in the country, but if you cannot manage even the finances of the sector that you have been given, I think this is where you begin to say the duties that have been given to perform in this country, I'm not fit to do them. So I think it will assist, and the sector that has been here today, next time, I'm assured that we are going to get a different report altogether. So even if the feedback did not do well, really, where everybody could see it was glaring that they're not doing well, I hope and believe after this, they are going to be motivated and see that we are the rest of this thing, and we really need them to be accounted for whatever they do. So really, for those who have done well, cheer us, keep it up. We hope we'll be an example, and we need more people to be filled in our country. That's the bottom line. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm just feeling that I should still air this view, despite the fact that you summed to some degree and the previous speakers as well summed. But I wanted to point out this very fact that we're on the 11th year with this CETA issuing an unqualified report. But when you look at what the forensic investigation uncovered, it gave total contradiction, meaning that some of these unqualified reports or opinions are not as meaningful. Because if you could, what has happened when you look at people hiring cars, spending millions, and so on and so on, it tells you there are no policies if the rules are not followed. But at the end, we have got an unqualified report each year. Meaning, if there was no forensic audit, and we wouldn't even know this, will be too late in the year. You know, singing Alleluia Hosanna, when in fact there are deep seated problems in this city. I'm saying, Chair, that we need to be able to go
deeper beyond that opinion. Because the opinion by the AG and any other body can escape, in fact, the truth can be escaped. And you find that you are told one thing, when in fact the other is happening. I'm just thinking, if this happened, and all the years you had this kind of thing, and at the end, people would then be saying, we've got an unqualified opinion, and so on and so on, and would clap their hands and tell them at the back of the shoulders, when in fact they were being fooled by the court themselves. And I'm not worried about that, to think to me, if we've got these kind of issues, and you need a forensic audit to get them, I think it worries a lot.
Thank you, Chair. Just to the honourable member around the issue of unqualified audits and then reports that come in. I think also it's important to remind members, if I may, that this report was actually instigated by the board because the board were uncomfortable and believed that there were certain things that didn't look right. You've got a chief accounting officer who's the CEO, who in this instance was actually the one that was being investigated, and that's the reference. And because the board acted, I believe, then we were able then to deal with the issues. But if you send a message from the top that certain behaviors are unacceptable, then obviously, hopefully the organization gets that whole matter. But I just wanted to remind that, and having said that, it's not discounting the point we're making that in any unqualified audit, there's only the management report that goes with it. Thank you.
We appreciate the good work that has been done by the CETAs, where they've done well, and say that let's go and meet with the department to really deal with the issue of targets, of proper workplace skills learned, so that they are dealing with the aspect of inclusion of students from FET colleges, from particularly universities of technology that would like to complete their programs. That is key for us. The department also is here for the responsibility of continuous oversight on the work of the CETAs, interrogate all these reports, check indeed if the learners are not our family members. The learners that we are part of are not our children and sisters and brothers. Because it happened in the Land CETA, the Peace CETA, where people were angry with any money on behalf of South Africans. And those people were referred as learners. So we need to interrogate this aspect of these learners and projects. These big projects where millions are spent on behalf of South Africans. The projects that are approving, whether indeed that are helping South Africa or helping you as individuals to get rich on behalf of South Africans. Because some of these programs, if you interrogate them, the people who demand the honorable dinner, you are not employed anywhere. They have certificates, but you can't employ these people because they are just not worth it. So let's look at that. We must get serious about this project. As a committee, we need you to give us a list of all your projects. A list of one, this is all the projects, this is the money, this is the person, this is the place, so that you can have oversight of this project. Because in the past interaction we've had with leaders, we were told that these demands are committed. And we asked a simple question, on what? No single sitter or our community came back to say these are our projects. They only say we've got 78 good projects, but there are no to them. You must come and tell the committee about your project. Come big documents. We can read in the committee. These are documents about our project. These are the people whose lives we have changed. We'll interrogate those reports so that we can check and meet and others in this report, and we will act. Thank you very much. Let us close the meeting. Those members must remain. There are minutes that must be adopted.
the meetings adjourned for purposes of those that are going to Johannesburg.
Yeah. issue there, if you not said correctly, more than that, that's Surya in the statement, whether the committee responded, that it was good that the period of 2 years was too long. And let's check whether, was there any discussion of that, was kept too long or that passed. I'm not correcting now in a minute, but in our deliberations thereafter, was that left length hanging there, was there? If it was, there's no problem. But I'm curious, this is the stance of the committee, are we here to clear, are we saying it should be left or it should not, because...
So what happened is, the proposal of the department was approved, which was an extension of 6 months. The department made a proposal, the period is 3 years, they suggested in the event the administrator is unable to finish his work within that period, the minister may extend that for a further 6 months. That's what they are.
The work and what they are saying, but this one, they are saying 2 years too long, so the service is less. But if we are saying somewhere else in the past, and he said maybe not as I say 2 years is too short, it can even extend. Can I say it as I say, I'm not debating it now. Can I take you to the same page, 2.6, respectfully? He says, say if you noted that the independent assessor process has outlined in the bill was not a legal process. However, the new proposed amendment has the effect of changing IA. Is that an official acronym for our independent assessment? We just lazy to write it. Is an official acronym called IA? Why don't we just write it in full on that opposite? So that we don't manufacture new things that we cannot. Unless somebody goes to tell me that we do have some acronym called IA.
Unless initially we define it, which is infant in bracket I N can utilize that now in this case. I think that's not right to fool otherwise.
If I take it to the, I'm sorry, I'm going to wait for that. If I take it to page four. Paragraph 2.4, the first bullet. I'm not too very strong about that, but I just make comment in it. That sentence sounded too long. When you read it, you can even lose what you say. If you can just read that. So I propose that the minister should appoint any competent individual in society to work with the council in the role of the teacher. That's what you are under by the minister, so that the administrator is not the only person. I'm saying it's so long, to even lose what it says. If it was possible to cut it in two, then it needs to be better. Can I take you to paragraph 2.5? The second bullet. Second bullet, second last line, starting with our point. I'm suggesting I'm going to assess N administrator. I'm just saying, Professor Zetima could appoint assessor N administrator and remove the other N. It says to issue directives. It's not going to do. It's going to issue directives. Appoint assessor. You continue. It's going to issue appoint assessor. So either he's appointed administrator or because to me you are appointing now assessor and administrator. And to dissolve that different thing. I'm saying look at those. Yeah, But in any way, you don't feel like that. I'm not so strong about it.
Yes? No, I agree with Prof, and I want to also say that I said suffer an administrator trauma and trouble.
Yes. No, I disagree. Actually, as a moment, it is correct, because what happens here is what the minister has to do. He's got the right to issue directives, appoint assessors, administrators, and the dissolved council. It's all different issues that he has the right to do. If you now couple assessors and administrators, then you're only saying that he can only do the one, but he can actually individually appoint an assessor, he can individually appoint an administrator, and he can individually dissolve the council. So it's all individual acts that he can do. It's not combined or separated.
Can I get to 3.3?
Intervention that I go on that aspect of whether I must do things.
No, I think the difficulty, Chairperson, is that when you list things and there are two, you'll say bread and sugar. If you buy bread, sugar and water, then it's the thing is buying. So if you want to say to appoint assessor, and then you say administrator, then you still continue with appoint. So because you are appointing two things, you are appointing assessors and administrator, and then you are also dissolving. That's the point. If you want to keep it the way it is, you must say to appoint assessors, to appoint administrators, and to dissolve. That's what God is saying.
I think both are clear. The answer is inside, that is not very material. What the Prophet is saying in Honorable Duco makes much more sense in terms of clarity in what he's talking about. But also, even as you proceed with it like that, does not necessarily be a major problem. You still understand what you're talking about. But I don't think we must say appoint assessors, appoint administrator. We may then say appoint assessors and administrator. And to dissolve. Yeah. Yeah. We may not even say and to have to, but we can as well say, this is the right to issue a directive to appoint assessors and administrator and dissolve council. That too, the second two, must go out. Yeah. You get that from
thank you. I take you to the next page. The paragraph is 3.6. I'm not sure if we mean what we are saying. They were saying 3.3. The committee confirmed that it was not happy with the appointment of the administrator. In fact, it is meaning that
it was never the view of the bank.
I don't think it means that. We are not happy with the appointment of a traitor in
Yes, go ahead.
When you continue that sentence, yeah. There is some sense in what is being said by the current statement, but I do get that the starting point becomes a problem. But it was to emphasize that we were not happy when there was dissension among its members. But that's what we needed ultimately, and the issues I was thinking. But as it's like the other long-winded kind of sentence process referred to earlier, that you end up losing the sense of the meaning. The other 2 points, the one is the 4. I think we're introducing, or Kak was introducing another person from the community, and so forth. so long, and I'm not understanding what they want to discuss. So I know this one, but I think there is a sense in the virtue of what's going on. It's only that it's long, you know, the approach to have an issue. But the committee is not a heavy with the appointment of an administrator if it's just based on dissension.
Yeah, I think that sentence should only focus on this sentence, yeah. That's what the Honourable Tukobo said, not me. It's not me.
Yeah. That's you.
It was proposed that the independent assessor should be given more power to conduct his investigation, so that those who refuse to disclose information may be restricted by law. That doesn't sound they may be restricted by law. As a sound that we're trying to say is we cannot say.
I think the idea was that those who refuse could be something that.
Yeah. It sounds better.
What? Yes, yes.
3.6? 3.6? I said that the committee was opposed to this proposal. I'm adding that. 3.6. I have proposed that option.
Let's proceed to the minutes of the 9th October. The report, the draft report. I think it's the spacing on the second sentence on 2, not spacing one comma. Not spacing is not relevant. Yes. My English has gone to America.
On page 2, the very last bullet, I'm saying that we are going to note that qualification, allegations, complaints, and the second last line, and it proposed if existing. Second line, CASA and it proposed if existing. The very last line. I'm suggesting that we say put allegations. Person taken an opportunity to respond to the allegations. The first bullet, the second last sentence says Tesla proposed that intervention by the, I want to include the minister, and I was. So it's better. I take it to 4.2. the first bullet. The non-aesthetic is critical. And further ensure that legislation and regulation on higher, I want to add education and training. I take it to bring forward. And the 4.3 is head with bullet. That is PAE. It was broad and I want to change and end, open ended. I'm assuming the IA above the interest will have paid all for it. So I don't have to look at it. Do I take you to the next page? The page, the paragraph is 4.5, the second bullet. The line starting with a point, same as old story, point N. Do I take you to paragraph 5? At the very first and 5.1. As a proposal for a consistency of education with the country was not welcome by. That doesn't sound. I know what it means, but it does not. We could say the committee did not accept. I don't think we can say it was not welcome. We can change that. Do I take you to face it? Yes, not approved by comment, something like that. Do I take you to part of 5.6? The last line thinking says high education students as their way at the laws. 5.6, not as they. 5.7. First line, individual person to assist paragraph 5.7, the very first line, I'm saying individual person to assist, I'm adding two.
Minister appoints a competent person to and remove individuals.
Yeah.
One thing to need the individual person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I cannot get correction of the minute more than. All those that we have listed there, the CHT, the HESTA, the CUT, for the first time you refer to University of Victoria. Others, you did put the parallel and say this is what they said. You are silent about UT throughout your presentation. Suddenly, you are responding to University of Victoria. I've made the correction, but it still says there's in a paragraph. It's the time where we say the UP says it.
Yeah, I think that's a printed written report. I think maybe and the University of Pretoria who submitted a written report.
I take you to the very last paragraph, page 6, the third line. Minister to appoint administrator, I want to suggest an administrator.
Also, it's the where the work case is, not where the work case.
under them where there were cases.
That's due to the newness of the tenth.
Okay.
I don't know, there's something that I put in the very first paragraph, page 1, 10th October. I think that's an incorporation between German and South African Tech Education. Vocational training and activity related to the German South African. But I was on the desk, I'm reading the very first paragraph. It's not written well when you say German and Saron Institute of Education Institution for vocational training and activities related to this. I don't know, there's something missing, I don't know what's there. Can somebody read that? There's something, you can leave it, but there's something that is, can I take you to the same page?
If it is either, then it must not be a comma, maybe it can be a, what do you call it? A semicolon there.
Yeah. Do I take you to page 2? Paragraph 2007 something. The second bullet. The second bullet is German, even the nature of the German government as against the South African education system. Are we saying they are against it? Are we saying we're putting this in the one when you say against the system, it sounds too strong.
Page 2. Second comparison with the Rousseau?
Yeah. Maybe also because it's talking about the South African unitary system, should be saying, rather than German government, should be saying the German federal system. These are the, or compared to.
Earlier this year, the Green Cake, is that the name of something? The Green Cake of what is Green Cake?
An organization?
Yeah.
That one seems to be very green.
Now, thank you, that's probably the, if you are saying that Green Cake organization of 2003, it would give them more meaning. But we wouldn't say that's a Green Cake.
Yeah.
It just doesn't sound sound.
It's a, apparently it's an organization called the Green Cake. Yes?
That's what Pro is saying, that we must start organization or association or whatever. My say earlier this year, the Green Cape Association or Organization approached the Department of Health. That is clear, right?
No, let's add on a vision.
citation is following page. The paragraph is 3.3. It was not a question as to where does Safar have a specific training program. I would better if I think I'm fired. So, okay, it was not a question. And that counts to the change of the I'll hear with that. I'm sure it's my own.
Good. Okay, thanks.
I take you to the opening and welcome. I'm assuming all these were going to stay in attendance and for those who the very last line there. At the at another meeting owing to a shortage of the party. Rather make an absence of the Quran, not a shortage of
the Quran. Okay.
I do know that 3.3 means what it says, but I don't know how it does not get all three. It was noted that the bill should make provision for the technical members of council who, by form of subsidiary act, were not involved in any form of difficulty. When you read that sentence and you say they must be protected, You can read that set together with 3.8, because you'll see that protection there again. If you read the truth, you'll get what they mean, but it's a matter of language, how to.
Yeah.
they are not exempted from what? Because if you exempt, I think it's a certain that relates to LinkedIn. It's about eligibility that you are eligible to pay to avail yourself in that institution. Because remember, you reason that this was very strong. That these people who are done nothing, okay, those who have done something, they go to another institution and become a member of council. You are saying that's wrong. Now, if you have not done anything, what you said in this report, you are all painted with one right. But we're talking on the issue that you must be, the members who are not educated can be eligible to participate in the institution of future government. But it's just that you see, Professor will put it better than me. Yeah. The minister of the 16 I'm very happy with them, except the opening and welcome. The last line there, the deputy minister, still is the only member of parliament. Either you MP for every community or don't you? So that is my only proposal. That let us take away his MP for the minister. Otherwise, put it to all of us. I'm happy with those men. It was supposed that the person be treated as a minister is not necessarily me. Adoption of me 3.3. So first of all, we have proposed amendment in this dinner. Second, why don't we propose a book and not come in? I'm successful. With 3.4. That we were going to propose an amendment. I suggest we must propose a book. Adoption. Is proposing a adoption.
Now that it has been added, I'm second.
Let's go to the 21st October.
I thought other members would lead that I see they can't necessarily lead in this instance now that the Prof has vacated his leadership position in this regard. That I would therefore need to move for the adoption of this unit. If there are let's correct one thing, sir. You see, with this meeting, we participate. Prof participated even with regard to both from them and corrected where we think grammatical errors or in the context may not agree. And after that, members are able to move in terms of that which does not have a problem, as long as members agree that in terms of substance, that's what was discussed in the meeting.
I'm taking ministry action, because it's not. And if you don't read minutes and that's our system, find that they don't mean what they are saying, they depend on you. We either give ourselves time to read them, or we accept that happened, and we don't adopt.
Thanks. Agreed, Mr. Doctor. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.